Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Chris Voronis, Democrat Dan Johnson Weinberger, and Illinois Tea Party leader Tim Krolaitis. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base, our new home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in the Radio Hall of Fame on the second floor of our new home on State Street, that great street in Chicago. Nice to have you with us. Toll-free lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289 if you'd like to email us a comment. Our email address, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. And that is where the streaming version of our broadcast, we put it in the archives. It stays there for a long, long time. So if you miss us each week, you can always find us on the website. Well, tonight we're going to be talking, obviously, not only about the battle for the Republican nomination for president, as we do give you a report virtually every Sunday night, but we're also going to be talking about the president's efforts to stop the unemployment mess in this country. The last week, he introduced his Jobs Act, and the Obama Jobs Act, in case you missed it, $447 billion, that's the price tag. It calls for a tax hike for wealthy Americans. It limits itemized deductions for charitable contributions. It will close loopholes for oil and gas industries. It will hike taxes on corporate jets. And we certainly know how many corporate jet owners we may have listening tonight. It goes on to cut taxes through extension and expansion of payroll taxes. It allegedly is going to cut small business share of payroll taxes. It will provide a tax holiday for new workers, and it will modernize schools and repair roads and bridges. And when the president delivered it, he was surrounded by policemen and firemen and teachers and construction workers and all the people that he wants to put back to work with this massive jobs program. And the question that we will debate at least a portion of our broadcast this evening, Dan Johnson Weinberger is our Democrat. It sounds good on paper, at least to some people listening to this broadcast this evening. But in reality, isn't this DOA in Congress?
No, it's phenomenal. It's a fantastic plan. When you're faced with unemployment, you got to put people back to work. And the best way to do that is through public works. And the way you pay for that is you start rolling back some of these ridiculous tax cuts for wealthy people that we've been living with for 10, 11 years. So I think it's phenomenal.
We should mention, by the way, tomorrow the president is going to unveil his plan for a minimum tax rate for those earning $1 million or more. And he's also going to talk more about the Buffett rule. This is a suggestion from Warren Buffett, the billionaire investor who believes that he's not paying enough in taxes and thinks that he should be, you know, his secretary should be getting some breaks, not just himself.
Right.
And let's ask Chris Voronis, our Republican, whether you think this is DOA already, the jobs bill.
I'd say ask Democrats. If that bill were heard in the Senate today, it would lose 10 Democratic votes. The president is forced to do a barnstorming tour across the country because he knows this bill is on shaky ground when his own party is doubtful about its passage. So for me, the president with this speech and his barnstorming tour is going from awkward to desperate.
Did you think the Jobs Act and the way it was choreographed, did you think that was maybe one of the first campaign rallies of 2012?
I hope not. If I'm on the Obama campaign, pass this legislation is a far cry from the days of Yes, We Can and Hope and Change. To me, Obama sounded more like a legislative director than leader of the free world.
Tim Krolaitis from the Tea Party joins us.
Yes.
Again, politically, does this thing have any chance of passage?
I hope not. I think it's the same garbage that they dress up, they repackage it, and they peddle it to the American people. They peddle it to us as an answer. It's the same old ideological angle of the left. And I think the president has been it's been pretty sorry looking at him go across the nation.
When you talk to your Tea Party people,
mm-hmm.
They don't want their taxes raised. But when they hear someone suggest that maybe a tax might make sense for people that are making $1 million a year or more, which, again, the quick reaction was, you know, that's just class warfare.
Right.
But isn't there great popularity with that message amongst the troops, amongst people who are Tea Party people?
No, I think amongst his base there is. And I think he needs to shore up his base. Otherwise, what happened in Nevada and New York is going to happen nationally. And, I mean, people recognize it for what it is. It's class warfare. It's tired. It's rhetoric. It's all the same.
And it happens to be the right thing to do for the country. And I think this is the moment of truth for Republicans. Are you against jobs? And then are you going to defend millionaires who pay less than what you and I pay as a percentage of their income? Are you going to defend keeping it that way and then live with the consequences that most of the people that, you know, most Tea Party, I don't think, Tim, you're a millionaire. I'm not a millionaire. Yeah. It comes down to which side are you on? Are you willing to do what's right for the country and ask millionaires and have millionaires pay the same tax as everybody else? Or are you going to be on the side of millionaires and high unemployment?
How badly does it hurt Republicans when you've got Warren Buffett out there standing side by side next to the president, and he will be, you know, the rule that will be repeated over and over again as part of the rollout starting tomorrow, is they're going to mention one of the wealthiest men in the country, who I'm sure has voted Republican more than he's voted Democrat, although he did vote for Barack Obama.
Look, if many people have said this, and I agree, if Warren Buffett has got pangs of guilt, he should just write a check to the federal government. Yeah. I've got no problems with Warren Buffett and the fortunes he's amassed. I do have a problem, though, when he makes it harder for other people to be successful. Look, the whole thing with Warren Buffett and the op-ed in New York Times, he was talking about the capital gains tax. His company, Berkshire Hathaway, makes its money on capital appreciation. Guess what the tax is on that? Zero. His secretary may have problems, like he said, paying taxes, mm-hmm. but he gets off scot-free. We've got one of the highest corporate taxes in the world. The only country that's beating us out is Japan, and its corporate tax rate is about 0.2% or 0.3% higher. And last time I checked, they were going into their third decade of the lost decade.
So in other words, what I heard Chris say is we don't think it makes sense to follow the best investor in the country who thinks the best thing to do for this country is to have millionaires pay the same rate on all their income, including their capital gains, as what regular people do.
The best
investor. Because they believe somehow, ideologically, we want millionaires to pay a lower tax rate total than regular people.
Well, the argument is that the millionaires will create jobs, and they will use their money to create jobs.
And
Would you
buy that?
No, where jobs are created is demand. I've created jobs. I'm not a millionaire. It's if people have money to buy stuff. Then there are jobs made to create and sell it to people. But when people don't have money in their pockets, and most people don't these days, there's not a demand for those jobs.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. Your reaction to the Obama jobs plan. Are you for it or against it? 1-800-723-8289. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dumont. From Geneva, New York to Bloomington, Illinois, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway. Nice to have you with us this evening. This past week, the National Association of Broadcasters had their big radio convention in Chicago. I had a chance to meet many of the affiliate owners that carry this broadcast each and every week. And Mr. Bishop, who is the kingpin at the Auburn and Geneva, New York affiliate of Beyond the Beltway, picked up a huge award as Broadcaster of the Year. And again, congratulations to him and the great stations that he runs in the Finger Lakes Broadcasting, the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York. And also Jerry Zimmer, who runs the Zimmer Radio Group, one of the great mid-market operators in the country. Met him, and we're at one of his many stations is Bloomington, Illinois, where our good friend Lee Newcomb sits in occasionally down there. So it's good to meet the folks that turn us on each and every week on Beyond the Beltway, and have been doing so for over 30 years. We've got callers $1,000 on the line. Let's already head to them. Let's go to Bonnie in Crown Point, Indiana, listening to us tonight on WLS, our flagship station. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My problem with Obama's quote-unquote tax on the millionaires is that I think either he's stupid or he thinks the rest of us are stupid, because when you think about what is a tax, what you have to pay taxes on, your gross-adjusted income. So after you do all your stuff and make all your adjustments, the bottom line number is what gets taxed. And if you have a bazillionaire who has all these expenses and deductions and depreciation and different credits and deferred tax liabilities and losses, and he brings them all forward, he can start with $1 million and wind up with zero for an adjusted gross income. Obama can change his tax rate from, say, 35% to 90%. But you know what? 30% of zero is the same as 90% of zero.
Bonnie, let's let Dan comment on what you have to say.
Bonnie, you're absolutely right, except for the first part when you suggested that our smartest president, perhaps of all time, is stupid, because that is exactly what the president's plan is, according to reports. It's that there's a minimum tax rate you have to pay, and that all the deductions and special exemptions that the wealthy tend to get, he's going to cap those so that at a minimum, millionaires and up are going to have to pay the same actual rate as regular people.
You said he was the smartest president ever. Well, the smartest president ever, in your view, his disapproval rating is now at an all-time high, a 50% disapprove. His approval rating, 43%, all-time low. So
it's been a choppy summer.
Stupid?
No. It's
stupid.
It's been a choppy summer, and I think with the Jobs Act and now with the making sure millionaires pay a minimum rate, I think things are turning around, and I think people want to see the president working hard. And
what's the signal in your view that things are turning around?
Oh, I think I think the summer was choppy. I think the debt reduction debate, which was a big Tea Party victory, which essentially is going to increase unemployment, political momentum was with the R's over the summer. But with the fall, I think the contrast is getting cleaner and sharper, and I think that's going to help the president.
Chris.
Look, Dan makes it sound like getting a bad haircut, a choppy summer. Obama got rolled over the summer. And it was largely due to his own incompetence.
That's not true.
He got rolled during the debt fight debate. He gave in. Looked weak when he gave in to Speaker Boehner and not getting the night to give his joint address to Congress. Look, we've already had a trial on this tax plan. When Obama had comfortable majorities in both the Senate and House, he wanted a funding mechanism for Obamacare. This tax bill went down, and what we see here is a modest version of it, a desperate move to appease his base that is extremely unhappy with him right now. That's what this tax bill is.
Your reaction it was alluded to earlier, but I want to get your assessment, Tim, to what happened in Nevada and New York last week politically. What signal does that send, and is it unique just to those two congressional runoffs?
Oh, no. No. I think I said this a year and a half ago. There's a freight train coming, and I think they know it, and that's why he's running around, saying the same old rhetoric, class warfare, everything else. I think Chris made a good point. This thing's DOA. It's DOA in the Congress, in the House, and in the Senate. The reason he's doing it so he can go out there and campaign on this. And what I think is, and Bonnie mentioned to it early, does he think we're that dumb? I think that the voter base is getting more and more involved and more educated about the issues, and this type of stuff isn't going to work anymore.
Jack, listening to us on WLS Radio, Cumulus Radio for Chicago. Go ahead. You're on the air. Jack, are you there?
I'm here.
Go ahead.
In the city of Chicago, rating my...
We're getting a bad signal. We're going to move on. Don't take it personally. It's just we've got a bad line for you.
He was lost in the cumulus clouds.
He was lost. Very good.
Thank you.
Let's go to Ashtabula, Ohio, where Steve is listening to us on WKBN. Go ahead.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I think that the Republicans must think we're all stupid to go out calling this class war and there's been a class war against the middle class for 30 years. Supply-side economics is in its core, its kernel, is basically saying, hey, the rich create the jobs, the rest of you, screw you. We need all the advantages. The concentrated wealth, somehow or another, needs all of the favors of government, policies, taxes, subsidies, because they're going to create the jobs. Now, we all know what happened over the last 30 years. Concentrated wealth tended to go out and speculate, not go out and create productive jobs here in this country. The productive jobs were shipped overseas, and we gave them tax breaks for doing it. Now, does that make any sense?
Not at all. And I think people want to see the president pushing for jobs. And if the Republicans are pushing for lowering the debt, I think most people are going to pick jobs over debt reduction.
Well, let's let Chris,
sure.
Steve, let's stay on the line. We're going to give you a chance to converse with our guest. But I want to get Chris, who's our Republican, an opportunity to respond to your castigation of what Republicans have been doing protecting the millionaires over the years.
Steve, I'm sorry, but class warfare is exactly what this bill is.
From the Republicans, that's what you guys are saying.
Look, say what you will, but this tax bill that Obama is proposing is a death sentence on small business. Mm-hmm. And what's worse than that is
the reason why
is a lot of those filers are small business owners. And what's more is the money just isn't there. The number of filers, when this tax bill was introduced 2 years ago, it was on incomes $200,000 and above. Now Obama parks it at $1 million. The revenues from incomes from $1 million to $10 million are about $230 million.
No, but Steve was going to ask the question, and I'll follow up on it. And correct me if I've misstated it. I mean, Steve's point was that to say that, you know, all small business people are making $1 million a year, that's not true.
At all.
Not only that, but it's anti-competitive to have a tax rate of 15% for capital gains.
Yeah.
But the guy who's running a small business, who's not even incorporated, he's just running a small business. And he's paying 25-35%
tax. You're making two points, Steve.
Yes,
you're talking about the tax code, and you're talking about tax rates on income. I am all for cleaning up the tax code. In fact, that's long overdue. A lot of these tax breaks and subsidies, I don't think GE should clear a year where they pay no taxes. So, and that's actually an area where you could get bipartisan support. But when you're actually talking about increasing tax rates on individuals who are earning, investing, taking risk, creating jobs. Look, I'll just go back to December of 2010.
But
Barack Obama made a pledge, and he said he would not increase taxes in a down economy. You could argue that right now we're worse off than when we were in December 2010.
Go ahead, Steve.
We have the problem that the Tea Party created, which is, first of all, they've completely blown any sense of confidence we might have had in this economy with all the fights they've created over nothing. And things have gotten a lot worse than Obama could have possibly have known they might be 2 years out here.
Steve, give me an example of a fight that you think the Tea Party did
basis. The debt ceiling alone. I mean, we can just look at the numbers, what came out a month later in terms of consumer confidence, business confidence, investor confidence. It went to the basement.
All right, let's let Tim, who's our Tea Party guy, let's let him respond to that all the hoopla created by the Republicans in the House and some in the Senate, that they created a sense of instability, and it led Standard & Poor's to come out with a recommendation they did, and the downgrading of the credit.
Guilty
or not guilty?
Not guilty. Not guilty. We're not guilty. You know what I think where people lost hope is with $16 trillion in debt and $100 trillion in unfunded mandates.
And if you guys had been paying, if the millionaires had been paying a little bit more all these years.
That's a red herring, my friend.
No, we're done with that.
Yeah, that's a red herring.
Wait, you know what?
The first thing, when you start digging yourself a hole, stop digging. The government has dug ourselves a hole, and it's $16 trillion in debt, and it's $100 trillion in unfunded mandates.
One at a time. Steve, go back to you.
Digging a hole when Ronald Reagan decided we could start deficit spending to build the largest military the world has ever seen.
Okay, we've got to pause on that note. We've got a commercial coming up. 1-800-723-82. We've heard from the Buckeye State. We've heard from Illinois. Where are you listening to the broadcast this evening? 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. Every Sunday night, I'm Bruce Dumont. From Texarkana, Texas to Spokane, Washington, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Around the table this evening, our Democrat is Dan Johnson Weinberger. He is an attorney. He's also a lobbyist for progressive causes. Chris Veronis also joins us. He's a public affairs executive with ASOP Communications. And the two of them were good friends when they went to the University of Illinois on opposite sides of the political fence. Tim Krolaitis also joins us. He is a Tea Party leader in the state of Illinois from Will County. And he is part of a group called, bumper sticker, I guess, is Take Our Country Back 2012.
Yes, sir.
Who do you want to take it back from?
All the bad guys that Dan hangs out with.
That's funny. We have similar bumper stickers.
Yeah,
my bumper sticker
totally
says
things.
Just 2012, blue with the Obama thing around the O.
And Michelle Bachman is coming in to do an event.
We're going to have her in the southwest suburbs of Chicago in Will County on September 26th. It's at 7 o'clock, a date to be, or a facility to be determined. So if you want to find out an update, you could look at JoliettTaxDayTeaParty.com, and that address will be up in the next day.
Okay. And before we go too much further, again, people listening around the country and certainly those on our flagship station, WLS Radio in Chicago, and watching us on television, you perhaps have heard the news that Charles Percy, a longtime Republican senator, U.S. senator from the state of Illinois, three terms, passed away at age 91 in the last couple of days. And again, I had the pleasure of meeting Chuck Percy as a very young Republican many, many years ago, back in 1964 when he ran for governor unsuccessfully in the state of Illinois, and then went on, took a little time off, and he was building on his career. He was the youngest man ever to head an American corporation at 29 years of age. He was the president of Bell & Howell. He was absolutely a whiz in the world of business, tried his hand at politics in 1964, running for governor. As a Republican, was unsuccessful in doing that. And then 2 years later, he ran for the United States Senate and defeated Paul Douglas, who had been the lion of the Senate insofar as liberal causes are concerned. And as many of you know, midway through that campaign, his daughter, Valerie, was murdered in their home in Kenilworth, Illinois. It created great sympathy for Senator to be Percy, but also he was leading in the polls at that time. He was a moderate voice. He wanted to be president, tried once. And again, one of the classiest people you could ever imagine, a man who probably the last great leader in Illinois who stepped from a business position and really devoted his entire life to public service, and to his daughter, Sharon, who is the head of WETA and married a U.S. Senator Rockefeller from West Virginia, Senator Rockefeller from West Virginia. Again, our condolences to Chuck Percy, a great political leader in Illinois and a man who carried the cause of moderate Republicanism at the national level for 18 years. Let us go back to calls. Let us go to Youngstown, Ohio, where Tom is listening to us on WKBN. Go ahead.
Good evening, Bruce. First of all, I remember Chuck Percy, too. Not personally, but he did seem to be a fair-minded individual and a nice guy.
Right, he was.
You know, I'm all for a stimulus, but why, you know, Obama, instead of playing Hell of the Chief, I think they're going to start playing Sammy Davis Jr. singing the Candyman. It's sort of like Oprah. You get a car, you get a car, you get a car. Why shouldn't this money that he's putting out there be handled more responsibly. If you're going to renovate and update schools, fine, but make that a loan to the school. What about all the school systems that pay their own way for building schools? If you're going to lower mortgage rates, why not make it a lien against the house if the government's putting any monies in there so that they get the money back? If you're going to extend unemployment beyond 52 weeks to 99 weeks, why not make that a loan for the individual? So if they really need the unemployment, they'll get it, and they can pay it back over 20 years. But if they don't need it, they can get off their butt and get a job and not have to get that money. And likewise with these construction jobs, why not remove the idea of prevailing wage and make sure that the materials, the rebar, the structure for bridges, the iron grid and so forth, girders and so forth, is made in the U.S. When they had that appliance rebate business, the Chinese made out big on that deal because most of the stuff, appliances, were made in China.
So I don't know.
Let's let Dan wine. That's a good point. Stay on the line. Let's give Dan a chance to respond.
So your first point was, you know, why would we put money into schools? You know, from my perspective, I'm an American taxpayer. I need every kid in America to get smarter so that we can have the best economy in the world. So if I can put some of my federal money into a school district in Alabama or New Jersey or Texas so that they've got modern facilities and they're not falling apart, of course I want my money to go to that. But I heard the caller say that maybe we shouldn't, or that's somehow wrong. I think that's exactly the type of thing we should be doing in this country. What's the problem
with
that?
Wait a minute. You know, our school system just three or four years ago, just before the bottom fell out, had a bond issue. And it's 30 years that I'm going to be paying for a new building. How is that fair?
So I guess I don't understand the point. Well, you should
the
be,
point
we should
is
be
it's
putting...
coming out of my pocket. Is our school system going to be reimbursed so that we are updated like everybody else?
I think every school system needs to be updated. And
but why should some of it be funded by the federal government and the people that were responsible enough to fund it themselves?
Because we're all Americans, so we should be taking care of every school.
Dandy, but make it alone.
Every school in America should be.
Yeah, it should
up to
be.
Code.
And fine, make it alone. Let them pay it back.
What's the difference? Why do you care if some poor community doesn't have?
Coming out of everybody's pocket.
Tim, I guess a question. Tim, my question I would say to you is, you know, I think you. I think I would agree with you. In an ideal world, the loan would be better. But how realistic is it that any school district or any individual taxpayer, as you said, if you wanted to give them some mortgage help, how realistic is it that they would ever pay them back? I would say not. I would say slim and none.
You mean the school system?
Yeah.
Well, you can make it. In other words, you can make it a condition that they can't file bankruptcy. They would have to pay it back.
Well,
isn't that the problem? We look at GM. You know, we bailed them out, and now they're giving all their workers $5,000 sign-on raises, bonuses.
Well, what
they're going to be right back where they were.
There is one point that I think you made that I think is a good idea, and that is if materials are going to be used, they should be American-made materials. It would seem to me you could put that in.
Republicans would say, well, gee, that's government meddling if you have a Made in America requirement. It's been the Democrats that have been pushing for that, and Republicans say, well, you're messing with too much government regulation.
What about that?
I got a good idea.
Do you support that?
Yeah.
Should it be made in America, or is that meddling?
With the context of that you lower the corporate tax rate in the United States so that we can actually make something in America.
That's the problem.
As much as they like the rhetoric of, oh, made in America, made in America, made in America. In the meantime, we got the second highest or the highest corporate tax rate where we can't make things. We got to turn around and make them overseas. So why don't we do that? Why don't we lower the corporate tax rate? Okay. Then we'll have products that we can
use. Why
aren't
the Republicans talking about that?
The Republicans are talking about that. Republicans and Obama, last time I checked, was for lower tariffs and freer trade. There's a lot of bills that are not law right now because they've been sitting on his desk for more than 2 years. Look, the reality is we do need some manufacturing. In fact, manufacturing sector has showed the biggest rebound in the economy, but we are a service economy. When Charles Fulton developed the steam engine, people said, well, gosh, this is going to throw some people out of work. Yes, it did, but that's who we are. We innovate, we change, and we're going through that right now.
Ann in Algonquin, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. Go ahead, Ann. You're on the air.
Well, first of all, regarding shipping jobs out of the States and primarily to China, of course, one of the prime shippers is Barack Obama's own job czar, Mr. Immelt, who, of course, with his all the GE jobs, light bulbs, and just all kinds of technology, has been trying to improve the Chinese aviation industry, has been sending a lot of jobs over there. So I think we first have to look into what he's been doing and see how we stop it. But as far as Warren Buffett and his comments, which, of course, printed in the New York Times, I think they're totally irrelevant. Now, he's a very smart man, but I think his political passion maybe got the better of him. He not only, of course, has supported Barack Obama, he probably did support Republicans in the past also, but he did hold a major fundraiser for Obama in New York not too long ago. So,
yeah, but he is a guy. I mean, he is a guy, however, again, in deference to Mr. Buffett, who I do not know, I mean, he's a guy, and what he's saying, this does not make him very popular around the country club. Or when he goes out on his trips around the country, I'm sure the people that he's having lunch with, his social groups, you know, he may be popular in the White House, but I'm not so sure they're welcoming him with open arms.
That's what he said. He said, look, you know, it doesn't make me popular among some of my peers, but, you know, this Congress has been coddling billionaires. That was the headline on the article. And we need to stop coddling billionaires as if having them pay a lower rate than regular people somehow will generate prosperity. And the nation's best investors said that's ridiculous.
There's a big difference between Mr. Buffett's income and what he has been paying taxes on his investments and dividends than what probably the average millionaire in this country pays in federal income taxes. When he was commenting on what his secretary pays, the gap there between that and his federal tax payments, he was talking about long-term capital gains,
which
that
is too low.
The rate is different, and for good reason. And his secretary or administrative assistant, whatever, that she was paying on the federal income tax.
Right. By the way, we should mention when we talk about the millionaire's rate, it would affect only about 0.3% of American taxpayers. That's fewer than 450,000 people out of the 144 million returns that were filed last year. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont from coast to coast and border to border, live from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We'll go back to calls. We'll go in just a moment. But, I was telling a story. May I ask? Let's just go around the table. Dan, how old are you?
I'm turning 37 in a couple weeks.
And Chris, how old are you?
37. I'll be 46.
46, yeah. Okay. I'm 67. I was telling you, we were kidding that the Tea Party is going to have a fundraiser coming up, and I suggested just so offhandedly they should have Dan Johnson Weinberger out there and put him in sort of like a dunk tank so people could throw balls and drop the liberal in the water.
Right.
Which, again, that harkened me back to growing up in Chicago. And, again, if you're of my generation, you will remember this. The most popular amusement park in Chicago was Riverview.
Yeah.
It was immensely popular right near Lane Technical High School on the northwest side of Chicago. And I remember as a kid, one of the things that happened there, I did not do it, but I saw it with my own eyes because I was, you know, maybe 9 or 10 years old. There was a tank where there were black men who were in literally a dunk tank, and they would be yelling things to people going by, predominantly white people who were going by, and you would, for, you know, whatever it was, you'd get 3 or 4 balls, and you would throw the ball, and the goal was to dunk the black guy into the water.
It's unbelievable.
And that's you know, that was happening in Chicago.
Unreal.
So it's I also remember going vacationing with my parents in the South. I remember seeing for coloreds and for white drinking fountains.
Wow.
You know, in St. Augustine, Florida, going back to, you know, I was 8 or 9 years old. But I mean those things existed, and obviously we have
In your lifetime.
In my lifetime, and we have people, you know, around the table this evening right. that are incredulous that that actually happened in the North.
Right. Yeah. Like, say, so when old, like people your generation will say, you know, it's hard to convey what a shift it is to have a black president. And for yes. people my generation, I don't know that it feels that significant. But it must be for people that experienced segregation, saw it as children maybe, but still saw it. To have the leader of the free world be a black.
Well, also, I mean, also obviously just the whole civil rights movement.
Right.
I mean, the civil rights movement really happened on television. I mean, it was a made for television drama.
Yeah.
That people watched on television in the North, in the South, and every single night you saw the advancement, you saw the brutality, you saw all the other things that went along. With the struggle for civil rights, which still goes on today. But again, yeah. I digress because I was just, it was an aside and they gave me this look like, what are you talking about?
Right.
And so, you know, as an older guy, I've got to give a little lesson every once in a while that
right.
the country has changed considerably.
We're willing to learn.
Yeah, that's great.
Let's go to Jeb listening to us on WAPI. He's calling from Alabama. Nice to hear from Birmingham, Alabama tonight.
Hey, how's it going tonight, guys?
How are you?
I wanted to address the point that was made about education and how it's the American prerogative to spend boatloads of money right now. I understand that some school buildings are falling down, and you know they need those necessary repairs. But at this point in time, we're spending the same amount per child for education that most private schools are charging, and they're producing better results. So my question, I guess, for the to improve the result that we're seeing out of those school systems without spending more money or spending the same money that other schools that are doing better.
Well,
you know, let me just say, because and then I'll never respond. I think we should put your question in context to what we were talking about, which is what the president has called for is a massive construction plan that would rebuild crumbling public schools. And there's been a focus on that in this country for quite some time. And I think that what I would argue is that if you look at one of the things that would be a common denominator in most private schools, and again, there may be people listening that say, well, it's not necessarily true, but in most private schools, I would assume are in fairly good shape insofar as the construction is concerned.
Right.
So I do believe that there should be a level playing field. I don't think in the 21st century, in the greatest country on earth, that students, regardless of where they go to school, public or private, they should go to a school that is falling apart, that has leaking roofs. I mean, I just don't think that should happen. There shouldn't be anything like that. Now, to go beyond that, now you're getting into the quality of the teaching, and I definitely believe that we can be more demanding of how we spend our money with teachers and what teachers teach and whether they're good teachers or bad teachers. There's all kinds of debate for that, but I would say that a core right, if you will, if you're a student in growing up in America, you should be able to go to a school that's decent, that has air conditioning,
right.
that has heating, that has classroom, that has books that are not, frankly, being destroyed. But again, the infrastructure, I think, should be leveled.
But there's a few things here. You're talking about a moral obligation society has, which is different than how do we head off a double-dip recession. The infrastructure bank, that's part of this bill, that has bipartisan support, and it'll get broken out into a separate piece of legislation that likely will pass. But you're talking about a moral obligation, which is different than jobs.
I'm also talking about a priority. I'm talking about a priority
sure.
that leads to a responsibility of government. I'm not even saying exclusively federal yep. government. I'm just saying.
But Obama's that not should, selling it that way.
But he's selling it as a jobs program. He's using schools as one example.
Which is the right thing for the country to do. And this is good, you know, it's right policy. We, as a country, should be building schools and modernizing schools
and,
for all kids.
And when all those schools are cleaned up and they're ready to go, then I think we can look at building schools in Afghanistan and elsewhere around the world, which also, I think, is a good idea to do. Anyway, we are out of time in hour number one. Dan Johnson Weinberger has been with us. Also, Tim Perlitis from the Illinois Tea Party. And our Republican tonight has been Chris Voronis. They will all be back for hour number two if you're on radio. And if you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Commentary this evening from Republican Chris Voronis. He is the head of ASOP Communications. That's a firm specializing in public affairs and issue management. Democrat Dan Johnson Weinberger joins us. He's an attorney and president of Progressive Public Affairs. And Illinois Tea Party leader Tim Krolitis, state director of the Illinois Tax Day Tea Party, president of the Will County, and also with a group called, or their motto is, Take Our Country Back in 2012. We have been talking about the president's jobs program and also the fact that tomorrow he's going to be unveiling more specifics about his plan for taxing people who make $1 million a year. And he'll be introducing the Warren Buffett rule. That is, Warren Buffett, as you know, is the billionaire who has complained that the richest Americans generally pay a smaller share of their income in federal taxes than do middle-class workers because of investment gains are taxed at a lower rate than wages. And he has become sort of the president's sort of best friend, at least in the world of wealth. And you're shaking your head. No friend to Republicans, not, Chris Voronis.
Not all Americans can sit around and make money on picking stocks like Warren Buffett. I wish I had it that easy.
Yeah.
The reality is Warren Buffett, all of his money's in his foundation. And he admitted in an interview that he'd much rather prefer his foundation gets the money because it would know how to dole it out to its beneficiaries better than the government. Those are his words. And again, we said this in the first hour, Warren Buffett is not talking about capital gains. He's not talking about corporate tax. He is talking about capital gains. He's not talking about the corporate tax. And that's the most insidious tax of them all. The United States has the highest corporate tax in the world.
And by the way, in case you just tuned in, the basics of the – now, this is the Jobs Act bill that the president introduced last week, which some Republicans thought was dead on arrival, at least in the House. It's $447 billion. It calls for a tax hike for wealthy Americans. More of those details will come starting tomorrow. It limits itemized deductions for charitable contributions. It closes loopholes for oil and gas companies. It hikes taxes on corporate jets. But also, the president argues that it will cut taxes by extending and expanding the payroll tax. It will cut small business share of payroll taxes. It will provide a tax holiday for new workers, and it will modernize schools and repair roads and bridges, which is something we were talking about at the end of hour number one. But one aspect of this, Tim Krolitis of the Tea Party, you found some questionable wisdom in limiting itemized deductions for charitable contributions. Yeah. How does that work from the White House's perspective, and why does it seem duplicitous for you?
Well, I just look at it in regards to they're closing off charitable or they're putting restrictions on charitable deductions, and they're increasing taxation, bringing in the revenue into the government, which then allows them, of course, to be the ones to dole out the cash. And I think any time that you put restrictions on charitable deductions and organizations that operate so much more efficiently than the government, you know, my thing is, why don't we follow the actions of what these people are doing? And so that came up, you know, that was when I saw that they were restricting charitable deductions, my first question was why?
And why would Warren Buffett like that idea?
Exactly right. But beyond that, at a time when poverty has increased, at record highs.
And this is why the nation's best investor thinks it's high time we stopped coddling millionaires and billionaires and asking them to pay the same rate that the rest of us pay, because we want schools that are modern around the country.
Do you want, because again, at the core of this is, you know, the president proposes something that his base hopefully will like, because they don't feel that he's shown enough strength in standing up to the Republicans. Yeah. So he is putting this forward because he knows darn well it's not going to go anywhere. But it sets up an issue. It draws a line between the differences between his White House and Republicans in Congress. Do you, as a political animal, and you're one of the political animals in the barnyard tonight, do you want the 2012 presidential and congressional election fought along class lines? I don't want to say class warfare, but you want that line in the sand between those that have a lot of money and those that are struggling to just to get by.
Absolutely. I love the idea of having a debate about should we agree with Warren Buffett that millionaires and billionaires should pay the same rate of their income as regular people, or should we not do that and not have enough money for schools and cops and firefighters?
Does having that discussion during a presidential campaign, which I think is a good time to have that discussion, but having that discussion, what does that do to the concern that some Americans, left and right, have about polarization and splitting the nation apart? Does that discussion, a robust discussion of that, does that help or hurt the camaraderie that a civil society should have?
It helps, because the reason for it is the basis of solidarity for all of our country. The whole point of having more revenue is because we need to look out for all Americans. Those school districts that don't have the money to repair their facilities, the only way you come up with the money to have a modern school for a poor district is if those of us with money pitch in so that the government can help pay for things. That's why it helps.
Your answer to the same question.
Dan does a great job of converting class warfare into motherhood and apple pie rhetoric. Mm-hmm. The reality is the richest 1% in this country, they earn 19% of the income, but they pay 37% of the taxes. The rich pay more than their fair share of taxes.
That's not true.
And you hit the nail on the head earlier, Bruce. This is a big, meaty bone to the Democratic base, this millionaire, quote-unquote millionaire tax bill. Because right now, the Democratic base is extremely disenchanted with the president. They're angry about the ozone bill. They're angry that he couldn't stand up to House Republicans. And they know that this bill won't go anywhere. The White House does. It doesn't have any support in the Democratic Senate. A lot of these tax measures were dead letters in the debt ceiling debate. The corporate jet. It went away, and now he's resurrecting them and saying, "Well, it's a different time now."
It didn't even have Democratic support.
All this is appeasing the Democratic base, which is extremely unhappy
but
with
my
this
question,
president.
But my question to you, because the Tea Party is credited as the voice of the people that has ignited and separated the left from the right. First of all, are you happy with that you've started this debate? And do you believe there is some damage to the country if the intensity continues?
I feel if you get both sides mad at you, you got to be doing something right. Okay. What I look at it, some of the things.
How does that solve a problem? What is it that you're – we're going to pause here for a break, but let me pose the question. How does it make the country better if the partisans on the left and the partisans on the right are at each other's throats wanting to kill each other? We go through another presidential race where we're now – we add class and who's making more money than somebody else and whether they're paying fair share. How does that debate, when it's all over – how does it bring us towards a conclusion that's good for the country? That's the question I want to hear the Tea Party response when we come back. from Sikeston, Missouri to Elkton, Ohio. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. Let's head southwest to Liberty Hill, Texas, where Bill is listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hey, I just got a question. Even people that don't believe in the Laffer curve realize that there's a point at which the Democrats can raise the taxes high enough to stall the economy. Witness England in the 1960s. The progressives there raised the tax rate to 95% of every dollar made over $1 million, and they never did recover from that. So I'm sort of curious. I've never understood the mechanism how class warriors actually benefit people like me that aren't union members.
Well, I guess I would ask you from Texas if if you think that there should be a minimum rate that millionaires pay that ends up around 25%, which is what most of us pay, if no matter what their deductions or special little tricks are, every millionaire ought to pay at least 25%.
I don't think that, because you guys will not be happy with 25%.
Well, so you're not answering your question.
If you were truthful, then maybe I would agree with you, but over time you've proven not to be trustworthy.
So you dodged it, because the question on the table that the president's proposing is not some, 1960s England issue, but it is straight up, should millionaires pay at the end of it, bottom line, same rate as regular people, around 25%.
If I had an honest broker on the other side, we could talk about it. But since he's not honest, and six times he's tried to raise taxes, by my count, probably more than that, why should I trust him?
If
you can find me a trustworthy Democrat, I might be willing to talk to him. But since you can't, the question's sort of academic, and I believe we're going to have to wax you guys in 2012.
So I would say, when Bruce, you asked before whether it's great politics to have the discussion, the fact that the reason why an intelligent Republican from Texas says I'm not for it is because all Democrats are untrustworthy. I think
exactly, and not only that,
I think independent voters are going to hear that and say, well, that sounds kind of ridiculous. It does make sense that millionaires pay the same as everybody else.
And
aren't
not
we
only
in
that,
debt? I'm voting
You dodged my question. How does that benefit me, a non-union member? Even if we did go along with your plan, how does that benefit somebody that's not a union thug, such as myself?
You drive over roads or bridges, or you got kids that go to school?
They didn't spend the money on roads and bridges last time.
Yes, we did. We spent...
How much did you spend compared to what you gave to German banks?
About half of
what you spent on giving to German banks and bailing them out to the Freddie and Fannie debacle.
And you gave it to some environmental companies that were going belly
exactly.
up.
Exactly. You gave pretend it to you show the same New Jersey school every year of my life, and I'm sure you're only keeping it there to show what we could do if we ever decided to fix it, but we're never going to. You guys are just not trustworthy.
And on that final point, I would say the Recovery Act has been remarkably free of scandals. I think Vice President Biden has done a phenomenal job
as
remarkably free, especially with oversight. You've had almost, a year of it from the Republican House. This has been one of the most honest, big programs ever.
I'm going to put that caller down as a Republican.
Yeah,
let's go to Justin in Fort Wayne, Indiana, listening to us on WoWo. Go ahead. Nice to hear from Eastern Indiana tonight.
I just wanted to add some thoughts to the whole concept of tax cuts versus job creation. When you hear about it here discussed, mostly here in regards to two dimensions, first of like the entity, is it going to be corporations, small business, the poor, middle class, and then whether it'll be by income, whether you tax the millionaires or the poor. And obviously there's arguments of who to give tax relief to, but there was a recent study that found that it's not necessarily small businesses, there's new businesses that create jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So... And what if you try to target the people that actually created businesses, that demographic? And one way you could do that would be to have like a venture capital tax, where if a certain portion of your income isn't put into an approved venture capital fund, then it's given as a tax. And that would flood the venture capital market, which already has money, excess funds now, but it would create an increased market for entrepreneurship. And then one more thought I thought I'd throw in. What if there was an office you could walk up to? Let's say you're a part-timer, you can't find a full-time job to save your life, but you have an idea for a business. that, you know, you don't have a bunch of money for lawyers and accountants. What if you just walk in there and it's federally funded and you can talk to an accountant and a lawyer and maybe set up your small business? So, I mean, these are kinds of ideas I wish would be thrown out more in terms of...
All right, let's let Chris respond, because some would say that, you know, the SBA is in a position to do that. But what you're saying is there's too much red tape at the SBA. You want something that's a little more indigenous or community-based or in some shopping center that's a more low-tech opportunity to give a leg up to entrepreneurial Americans.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea.
Dan's gone through this. I'm going through it right now.
No, you're young.
I think the costs of starting up a business, what are these talking like consulting a lawyer, an accountant, are really nominal at the end of the day, and I don't really see them as inherently stimulative to the economy on the macro level. So, I kind of question the utility of that.
But I do think, entrepreneurship is one of our country's strengths. We should continue to encourage it. You may check out, there's a decent website, startupamerica.com, that has some good resources. No plug.
Justin, thanks very much. Let's go to Bob in Meridian, Idaho, listening to us on KBOI in Idaho, one of the most beautiful states of all of our 50 states. Go ahead.
Well, you got that part right.
That's great.
I was shocked. I was just listening, and I believe I heard the progressive, Mr. Weinberger, advocate a flat tax.
What I was advocating for, if it was an effective flat tax, I'd be open to it. And the reason why I like the progressive federal income tax is because then at the end of it, after the sales tax and the property tax and all the exemptions and deductions, it gets closer to an effective flat tax. But I think
well,
the heart...
Let's see you guys vote for it then. Get a flat tax.
Hey, I'm open for it. I think in practice...
that's funny because... Nobody on your side will even approach the subject.
Yeah, if you took...
As far as building schools, when did building schools become a federal responsibility?
It's an American responsibility.
No, it's a state and a local responsibility. And in the last 30 to 40 years, we've doubled spending on education per capita. In any measure you want, we've doubled spending after inflation, and the results have gone down.
Yeah, and by the way...
Why is more money going to solve the problem?
I don't... By the way, just... I was on my soapbox in the last hour about that, and I thought I said I did not see it exclusively as a federal responsibility. I think it is a responsibility of government, whether it be local, state, not necessarily federal. But I think that if you're a student in Alabama or you're a student in Alaska or Nebraska or wherever, there should be a common denominator of expectation of what a school building in America should be like in the 21st century.
And you,
with computers and hopefully great teachers and inspired teachers. Well, that's a whole different debate. I'm not even going to tackle that one because that one is dicey. But the basic... The infrastructure of education should not be a very debatable point, I don't believe.
And so, but part of the reason we need to spend more, we need to invest more in education is the economy is getting more sophisticated, more complicated. To get a manufacturing job these days, you got to know how to run computers well. The low-skill, high-paid manufacturing jobs are going away. So that means we need to invest in Americans to make them smarter with better skills. And that's not cheap. That's not free. You got to pay for that.
What about it? Mr.
Perhaps we ought Tea Party. We ought to invest in holding our educators more responsible, because I think the education of our kids comes right from the responsibility. And of course, we don't want to look at teachers' unions or things like that to be able to say we got the brick and mortar, we got the computer, and we still have failing grades. What then?
And what about if let's just carry it further? I mean, what responsibility is there of the parent? Isn't
a lot.
The parent? Okay, so let's talk about the real world, where a lot of parents are irresponsible.
Right. Yeah.
So what is the responsibility of a school? Let's forget about whether it's federal, state, or local that's paying for it. Should there be a responsibility of a school to provide a warm breakfast to families and to children who will not get it at home? In an ideal world, of course they do. But in many schools and in many homes, they don't get it. Is that a responsibility for a school district to do that, Tim?
I think there's a certain, you know, safety net that we might be able to put in under some circumstances. But I think, to be quite honest with you, these systems are totally abused. Don't give me the, how can you not feed a small child rhetoric.
How could a $1.20 breakfast be abuse of a system?
When you add it all up nationally, that's why we're $16 trillion in debt. Because we only want to help.
Dan, you're not talking about making kids fatter with an Egg McMuffin for $1.20
and cheese.
I actually know how the school breakfast program works. It's $1.20 per meal and $1.60 for lunch. And if people think the reason why we're in debt is because we're trying to feed kids.
No.
And it's not because, And it's not because we spend 52 cents out of every federal dollar on a crazy imperial military. And it's not because we won't have millionaires pay the same tax rate as regular people. It's because we're spending too much on feeding hungry kids.
And we don't want to support those evil fossil fuels, and we want to support, green energy.
Go ahead. What's the name of this bill that Obama is plugging? The American Jobs Act. Well, I mean, we're getting really far off the path of how he's selling this. It's not about the quality of education. It's about building schools, which at the end of the day will be a short-term stimulative effect on the economy. So, I mean, really, this is an oversimplifying a problem that has been ongoing for generations.
I think we need more discussions, and we'll continue when we come back, about what is it that people want and think government should provide, period. Back shortly from Chicago. From Marks, Mississippi to Tucumcari, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us. From Beirut on the lake to Little. What are you laughing about?
Tucumcari?
Tucumcari. Haven't you heard of Tucumcari?
What is Tucumcari?
Tucumcari is in New Mexico.
Oh, I didn't hear New Mexico.
Well, I didn't say I.
Are you just
how many Tucumcaris are there?
I didn't say that in common.
Anyway.
I guess I should have known.
You should have known. It's the land of enchantment. Chris Veronis is with us this evening. He is a Republican. He is the head of ASOP Communications Group. That's a firm specializing in public affairs, issue management, and labor communications. Our Democrat tonight is Dan Johnson Weinberger. He is a lawyer with a new law firm called
Corey Cotter, Heather and Richardson.
That's what I thought. Also, you're doing progressive lobbying as well?
Progressive public affairs.
And a card-carrying liberal Democrat.
I got the bumper sticker to prove it.
And also with us this evening is Tim Krolitis. He is a state director of Illinois Tax Tea Party and also Will County, which is in western rural Illinois, and a Tea Party leader. And his motto is Take Our Country Back 2012. Yeah. And Michelle Bachman is coming in to do a little fundraiser for herself, right?
Yeah, she's going to be in on the 26th of September in the southwest suburbs of Chicago. We're looking forward to it.
Let's go to Spokane, Washington, where Mike is listening to us on KXLY. Mike, nice to hear from the city of mansions tonight.
Well, thank you, Bruce. God bless you. You're right. We have many Cutter mansions here, but Chicago is still number one, not number two.
You're the best.
I was raised in North Idaho. I heard you said about Idaho, so you're right there, Coeur d'Alene.
Yeah, Coeur d'Alene and Wallace, Idaho. Beautiful. In fact, I discovered that part of the great state of Idaho when I was doing a remote from KXLY many, many years ago.
Right. Yeah, it's beautiful country. Sandpoint, Lake Ponderake.
You got it.
Sandpoint's the home of Sarah Palin. So.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that. Yeah, she was raised there. You bet.
Huh.
Congress and the president need to work together. We all know that. Unemployment is at 9.1 or higher. Many have used up their unemployment benefits. So what do they do? So jobs bills need to be passed, and we can't blame the poor and the rich. We can't get in that game.
So what do we do? How do we, given what's going on now, do you give credit or do you place blame on the Tea Party? Are they making the likelihood of each political side getting together easier or more difficult?
Well, I don't blame the Tea Party. They have some good things, Bruce, but there has to be compromise, and some of those Tea Partiers perhaps have some difficulty compromising.
What about it, Tim?
That's fine, but they're not in the legislature. So let the compromise play out in Congress and the Senate. But what we're going to do is try and hold responsible decision-making both to the Democrats and to the Republicans, which we haven't seen a lot of.
But again, if the grassroots are not giving some leeway to the people that you sent there, then how do they compromise? If you are voting to send people to Washington, D.C., when you vote for them, you want them to do exactly what they said they were going to do, which means when they get there and they're sitting across the aisle from someone else who was sent for another reason, how do you ever find common ground?
I think for us to say that there's no sense of compromise, I'll give you an example. We voted in my district, my congressman was Adam Kinzinger, a freshman. All right, we took a different point of view on the debt ceiling, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We worked very closely with Adam Kinzinger. I still respect Adam Kinzinger. And we sat down and he discussed the whys and the wheres and the whats of why he did what he did when he was voting. Now, that's the things that we need to do better. We need to have that information and education so that when there are votes on the floor that we're not just, blindly carrying pitchforks and yelling for something.
So in other words, wouldn't it be reasonable to say, if I were talking at the Tea Party and in the body
you'd
of
have
Tim
to have
Carlitis
some protection
right here,
for you, brother, right? But that's okay.
Right? And I would say, look, you control the House, but, we control the Senate, and we got the president, and we're open to your tax cuts, but you got to be open to raising taxes on wealthy people. That's compromise. You get some, we get some, and we meet in the middle. I think Democrats are more willing to say, sure, we'll compromise, while Republicans say, I won't.
Yeah,
How do you do something, though, again, in a world where each side generally does not trust the other, and probably our caller from Texas in the last segment probably was speaking for a lot of people and that right. He doesn't trust Democrats. We could have callers that could say the same thing about Republicans. How do we get to the person that's saying, what the Democrats really want is they want the Republicans to basically, in some respects, stand up to their one of their constituencies,
yep,
which are wealthy people,
yep,
stand up to them and give them a thumb in the eye. And you know what the Republicans will say? Why doesn't the Democratic Party, why don't you give us an example of something you're going to do to stand up to one of your constituencies?
I've got a great idea.
And you know what? And frankly,
I got a great example.
When they pull the rug out from one of their constituencies, meaning they could suffer political consequences, it's our turn. And it's like a ping pong game from that. You do this, we do this. Nobody trusts each other.
How about this one? One of the core constituencies of the Democratic Party are labor unions. God bless them. And teachers' unions are very unhappy with the Obama administration because school reform, with the race to the top, which has been reducing the role of tenure, putting teacher qualifications and student achievement, forcing states to pass laws that tie student achievement to compensation. Like every state has had to pass a law abolishing those laws that prohibited school districts from doing that. The teachers unions feel like the Obama administration went right after them with race to the top. So I think Barack and the Obama administration have said, we are doing what we think is the compromise best path for the country and our core constituencies. Sometimes you got to take a hit. But on the other side, and they think this is objectively fair, the other side, Republicans are saying, compromise? Heck no.
Is there a position that you think the Republicans have compromised on? That is a good point. By the way, the position that the Obama White House took on accountability for teachers,
yes,
that's a very popular position.
Yeah.
That transcends political boundaries.
But
I think
tough.
I mentioned
my question,
it earlier.
And you did. Yeah. So is there a question, is there an example of a Republican issue that the Republicans have given
up? A Democratic issue.
A Democratic issue.
That Republicans have compromised.
Yeah.
Unemployment benefits, minimum wage. Compromises happen all the time.
They didn't vote for minimum wage.
That's
or unemployment benefits.
Yes, they did.
Extending.
Yes, they did.
But not on minimum wage.
And under Clinton, absolutely.
No, that was an all D.
Yes, no, that went through.
So, but how about the last 2 years? How about in the last 6 months, the Republican House, with all this talk, where's one thing when they went after their own core constituency, the way Obama and the Democrats have, because it's good for the country? I guess there aren't any.
Fred in Fort Wayne, Indiana, listening to us on WoWo. Give us a call. Go ahead. You're on the air, Fred.
I'm just having listened to this to give you my encapsulation of it. The Democrat plan for saving the country economically sounds more like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Correct.
If you've taken Econ 101 and 102 and just extrapolate from there, some of this stuff isn't going to work. I'm not by any means saying give the fat cats a free ride, but there aren't that many of them. As for that matter, not trusting each other, show me any country in the world where there's been socialism for years and years and years that's really worked and made it heads and shoulders of any other country on earth.
I'll answer that. You know, an earlier caller said, well, gee, you know, England had like 90% marginal tax rates in the 60s, and that put the whole country down. Well, what tax rate do you think we had during World War II to pay for that? Our top marginal tax rate was 91%. Then it dropped to the 70% in our wealthiest decades, in the 40s and 50s and 60s. The tax rate was much higher than it is now. So
yeah,
that's
rid of that. In Reagan's term, we brought it way down. I can remember watching a Barney Miller show
too.
When they said that I'm going to put you in a 70% bracket, Harris, for your Newton novel.
And guess what? The country was much wealthier then than it is now. Things were better then. So if you want, if you call that socialism.
Running up the tab some more. The geese are finally coming home to roost, and now you guys are fighting over the carcass of the golden goose.
Yep.
In your view, sir, what could be a resolution just in the ability of each side to take a moment and listen to the other side? Are we beyond that? That possibility?
I hope not, but when you Obama and his economic czars insulated from reality up there, and they read the Solomonsky playbook and socialist Boy Scouts guide with economic planning and throwing all these verbal grenades all over the place. It doesn't cut it with me, so they got to cut back on it. Rhetoric, or else the voters are going to have to make an up or down decision come next November, not this November. So.
All right. Well, can I ask the caller, do you think, if it's up to you, should millionaires, after all the tax breaks, deductions, the same question.
I'm not going back down that same line.
Yes or no?
You guys have been doing this all night long. I'll let one of the other guys answer your same old question.
So no.
Yeah, I already gave you the answer to the question.
He said no.
He said no.
He thinks it's
all. You know what, Bruce? Dan has spewed this rhetoric. I want to ask him, when are we done coddling the trillionaires? Who are the trillionaires? It's the bureaucrats that are handling and just dumping.
No, there aren't.
And running up. Well, it's our government. When you're ready to stop coddling them, then we can stop coddling millionaires, okay?
Okay, 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dubon from coast to coast and border to border. Now in year number 31,
hey-o.
We're going to keep doing it until we get it right.
Hey-o.
Back shortly from Chicago. From Cucamonga, California to Kankakee, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway and thinking of Kankakee. Speaking of Kankakee, Mary is listening to us in Kankakee. How are things in Kankakee tonight, Mary?
Well, it's a little chilly, and I got a couple sprinkles on my laptop here.
Well, very good.
I'm sitting outside so that my reception is okay on my cell phone.
Don't electrocute yourself in the middle of the show, please.
Have you been listening to Kokomo by the Beach Boys in Kankakee?
Oh, yeah. What I wanted to speak about briefly was this Job Act bill, which we don't even know what it is yet, funding.
You could read it.
I see nothing that it's really going to do. What kind of loopholes is it going to close, you know,
first of all?
You know, we don't know.
You can read the bill. It's online.
And what would you think of the gas and oil? How will the gas and oil... How will it affect the gas and oil?
So I think the term is bonus accelerated depreciation. It basically says a similar thing. You got to pay your taxes, gas and oil industry, the extractive industries. And it says you can't get all these special tax breaks. You got to pony up. Yeah. The country's in debt. You got to pay.
Let's give them to those successful green energy corporations,
like
right?
But what about that? I mean, do you think? I mean, let's follow up on that, Tim. Do you think the gas and oil companies are paying their fair share?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Why? What leads you to believe that they are?
Well, let's find out.
I don't have a problem. You know what I mean? I think the fossil fuel industry has been demonized from the left for so long. I think they're paying.
Well, let me ask you, are they paying their fair share?
I think they bring a lot to society.
You said yes.
We talked about a level playing field a moment ago.
Yeah.
You know, the oil and gas industry would argue that the subsidies are attached to jobs. At the end of the day, this is really crony capitalism. Yeah. These industries don't need these subsidies. God. We don't need to be subsidizing ethanol, and we don't need to be subsidizing green energy jobs. Where in Europe, it's $250,000 that goes into one job in the solar industry, or $400,000 that goes into Germany in their wind power industry. These businesses should be able to succeed or fail on their own.
Well, unless, of course, they're too big to fail. Let's go to Hubbard, Ohio, where Jack is listening to us on WKBN, the Big 57, radio home of Dan Rivers.
Right, right.
Go ahead.
I just like to say this, Bruce. These two guys, and along with Congress and the Senate, they can't seem to get together on any measure. Why don't they start listening to the American people a little bit and tell them to stop the foreign aid, stop these wars, bring our troops home, and the money that they save, they could fix a lot of problems.
Well, that's true. If we brought these troops home and quit spending 52 cents out of every federal dollar on our massive military, we could spend a lot more money here. And here's the part I don't get about
Dan, you should send an email to the president who is continuing George Bush's policies.
Thank goodness Barack Obama is pulling people out of Iraq. The only president in recent memory to do that. Thank goodness. But here's my question for the Tea Party.
Finally.
Finally. Oh, yeah, somebody got it done.
And putting him into Afghanistan.
Somebody got it done. Yeah. So the question is,
out of Iraq into Afghanistan.
Let me ask Republicans. Let me ask Tea Party. Right. Let me ask Bruce DeMont. I'm for cutting our military significantly.
Guys, why don't we cut back on some of the foreign aid that's going out of this country?
Well, we could do that, sir, but the reality is that foreign aid really represents a very minuscule portion of the federal government.
Investment
and it's viewed as an investment around the world, and so it's
but
not
broke,
a lot of money.
Bruce, we're broke. Every little bit's going to help.
Well, I.
But that, you
that's
you
not
raised
to make up the savings.
But
it's
he raised the military. You think we should cut the military, sir?
I think we should bring our troops, a lot of our troops, back and put them on our borders. If that's the case, put them on our borders.
There you go.
Protect Americans. Forget about these other countries for a while.
That's right. And let's also have common sense and. You know, and I think every bill, you know, and I frankly would like to be the czar. I would like to be the common sense
the czar.
Look at every piece of legislation that's voted on and ask yourself, does this make sense? What is the ripple effect? What is the ramification of this?
So what do you
common
think?
Sense?
That, you I are think the czar. I think
right
you just
now,
got
actually,
appointed the czar. Yeah.
I think that, I mean, because there's so many things that are done. And by the way, you hear it on talk radio. You hear it on talk radio, whether the host is left or right of center. The American people, generally speaking, and there are some exceptions.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I think the common denominator amongst the American people, at least as depicted on talk radio and the people who call talk radio, I think there's a common denominator of common sense. I think there's more common sense in the average voter than there is in the average lawmaker, be they state lawmaker or national lawmaker. There's an element of common sense. I think when you cross that you know, when you cross the Potomac and you get yourself inside the Beltway, I think you lose all perspective about what's really going on. Even if someone has sent you halfway across the country and you got fire in your belly and you're going to go in there and you're going to change things, you cross that Potomac, you get sucked up in the social milieu of Washington, D.C., you get seduced. you get seduced, and you're getting seduced, and the American taxpayer is getting screwed.
Then what do you think about the Jobs Act, Czar?
I think there are elements of it that would make sense, but I don't think you can collectively say that the Jobs Act is a good idea.
What's the bad part?
I'll talk about one of the good parts. Is yeah. I'd like to know more about the idea of building roads and building bridges. I believe that as a nation, you have an infrastructure that has to be maintained. If you don't maintain it, first of all, it creates jobs,
yeah.
but it's an investment back into America. And I would rather see more investments in the infrastructure of America, in the institutions of America, than, frankly, doing ongoing nation building. Nation building has a role, but it shouldn't be forever. And I think what's happened in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya and in 50 other nations around the world, where our footprint is too large, it's too deep, and it's too expensive, and you know what? We can't afford it anymore. Period. On that note, our thanks to
Amen.
Dan Johnson Weinberger.
Thank you.
And Chris Veronis and Tim Krolaitis.
You.
This program is a Genevieve production. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks
Bizarre.
To Tom Veracruz and Dan Dorpin for their assistance of the production. This is the Czar of Common Sense. That's my new moniker.
I like it.
The Czar of Common Sense.
Hello.
From Chicago.